statement, but that's not true. Although a lot of people believe it. And so they think that a dipole without proper grounding is not going to work well. Well, I guarantee you that the dipole and that monopole that was on that on the portable life support system that an astronaut uses when he's floating free in space, it works like a charm, even though there's no local ground. Let me see if Roy is here. I think the voting system is working in a peculiar way tonight. It's part of why we're getting so many dropouts. Let's see if Roy is getting through now. AC2GS.
He's on Echo Link.
Okay. We'll wait for Roy on Echo Link. AC2GS on Echo Link. K2RIW. Go ahead, Roy.
Detroit.
Are we down on Echo Link?
Understanding what I'm saying. You mind if I repeat myself and explain myself? You're having a problem with the echo to the repeater site. Do you mind if I explain myself, because you're not understanding what I'm saying? You're totally misunderstanding what I'm saying, Dick. I am not talking about grounding the antenna. Not what I'm talking about when I say a DC ground. Do you mind if I explain myself?
Yeah, Dick, the antenna I have, the top element grounds over to the base where the ground plane radios go, and the top radiator is much, much shorter than the ground plane radios as far as length. There's a big difference in the ratio, and it has four ground plane radios, but this is a DC grounded type A antenna. I know what he's talking about. It's not just an open, an open quarter wave ground plane antenna. The top element is actually grounded to the base. And the main part of the element, the top element, is much, much thicker, going up to the point where it bends around, and then it turns into like 3/8 diameter metal comes down and grounds to the ground plane base. And the radials are about 3/8 of an inch solid aluminum that go off the thing. But that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, I can tell that's a more complicated structure. And therefore, making a prediction without a measurement is going to be a little bit more difficult. How we know, don't give it us right now. We're switching over to the science and physics report right now. And Roy, let's see if you can get through, Roy. AC2GS, K2RIW in the tech net. AC2GS, K2RIW. Are you there, Dr. Roy?
What is the echo link?
Put me out, Dick!
Okay, I think you said he's logged into Echo Link. And therefore, you should be coming through on Echo Link. Is that what you're saying, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW?
I'm saying there's an active connection to his computer on Echo Link. Whether or not he's in front of his computer or his radio, I couldn't tell you.
Trying again.
Dr. Roy, I heard you say he's trying it again. So give it a go. AC2GS. K2RIW in the tech net.
Tech, I was away from the radio, not on purpose. Could I ask Dr. Roy a question?
Let's wait and see if we can get Dr. Roy to come through first. AC2GS. Give it a go, Roy. K2RIW. AC2GS. K2RIW. I hear you intermittently, Roy. Give it a go. Eric, KE2EJ, do you have a suggestion as to how we can get Roy? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ, I would suggest you call him on the phone and tell him to pick up a microphone.
In other words, you're fairly sure that the voting system in his neighborhood should be picking him up on 2585, is that what you're saying, Eric?
Put it this way, do you hear him on the input?
I didn't switch to the input during that very brief transmission he made. Roy, give us a transmission try it on 2585, your normal way. AC2GS, K2RIW. Are you hearing them by any means, Eric? K2EJ, K2RIW?
I got no indication of him picking up a microphone anywhere. Did you hear him on the input?
Hear me now, hopefully.
I'm hearing you now, hopefully. A little bit noisy, but we're hearing you. Has something changed that you're QTH, Roy? AC2GS, K2RIW?
My problem.
Hear me now, because I'm listening.
I heard you say, are we hearing you now? I'm listening. And then you cut out. Over to you, Roy.
With. Jack. Get into the UHF machine, it'll work that way too.
Okay, let's make sure you've got your PL turned on, because each transmission you make, a couple of seconds comes through and then it drops out, as if the PL wasn't turned on, is a guess. AC2GS, K2RIW. K2RIW. Give it another try, Roy, by any of the means you can transmit to us. Now, I was listening on the input. I heard you say, is this any better? I didn't hear out how you're coming through the machine. Give us another transmission, Roy.
Two of us are Yankee. Roy, I hear your input loud and clear, but you're not making the repeater. Roy, hear said sound repeater.
Yeah, I'm hearing Roy on the input, but he's not coming through the repeater. Are you sure your PO is turned on, Roy? EC2GS, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2J. I'm trying to log into it, and it's not letting me, so. You know, if you can go in through KPQ, that would be good. He's also logged in on Echolink, so you can go that way, too. He's not making it into Glen Oaks. We only got Glen Oaks and Plainview. The hospital's not working.
Any chance that you might get the hospital working, Eric?
Not unless you want to go up on the roof of the hospital.
I was hoping with all your ways of remotely controlling things, you might hit it. Okay. Too bad you haven't got a Yagi where you can aim some more signal at the Glen Oaks. Looks like the hospital.
Looks like the Glen Oaks receiver has a problem.
Yeah, I can tell, but I'm not coming through occasionally. Yeah, I can tell you're powering out a lot more power, but you're still extremely noisy on 8.5 right now. And Eric is trying to log into those remote inputs to see if he can make a correction. Shall we stand by, Eric, while you make some attempts? K2EJ, K2RIW.
Looks like the Glen Oaks receiver has gone deaf. Let's see something here.
RC210, repeater controller V6.045. The time is 9:39 p.m. The time is 9:39 p.m. Ready.
This way? Yeah, there's a probably there's a coupling problem with the way I was transmitting before, I can't get in now. I just went to the east machine, apparently you heard me through this way. So something happened to the controller, maybe it's got to be reset. Back up through 37, I can't reply back through 85. There's no audio coupling from my radio going through the system. It was before, but not now.
Yeah, I'm trying to get it to pass audio from 25 to 85, but it's not happening yet.
Coming in through 449125, your audio's a little low going both ways.
K2, 449. Looks like we do come through only this way. So you guys, please stand by. K2VJ is working on getting the audio to come through between 25 and 85.
KD2OBM disconnected. W2KPQ.
No audio comes through by any other means.
Yeah, well, it's coming out on 85. There's a problem up there, and it's not going to get fixed.
So I think you're saying it's almost ready for us to stand by, except for the guys that can transmit on 449. So I think right now, no other way to run the net except 49, is that true?
That's interesting. The audio is cut out. 5 is 10, and water, 7 that is under the UHF wind up on the VHF. Also, like Solis, so we can go in that. It's going to be a one-way conversation.
It's beginning to sound like we're not going to get a 6 tonight, Eric. Boy, what a nice long delay. So maybe we should just stand by tonight and go watch the football game. KE2EJ, take your eyes. Looks like you're going to be taking another trip up there. You must be getting, you must be wearing out that elevator, Eric.
Yeah, I'm not wearing out the elevator. I'm looking for some help. Okay, it's up to you, whatever you want to do. I mean, you know, people get into it with Repelent or through IOLP or Sochef or Zelda. You can just plan out for a moment. Good choice. You are a WPAC.
KE2INX.
Mr. INX, go ahead with your suggestion.
Yeah, the other frequency is very low and we're going to receive, you know, very, very low. Let's have a patch caught out.
By the way, do you hear me now?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I'm playing on UHF for a change.
Roger, roger. Well, I just want to get my my little words in. That's about it for me. So, KE2INX on the side.
Okay, so I guess you can hear me, Dick?
Yes, I'm hearing you, Roy. So, by way of 439, you're coming through. And you'd like to make a report of, let me think now, special or general relativity or... or a scalar wave, it's your choice. AC2GS, K2IW. It's going to be one way because I think very few people are going to be able to get back to you. You got it, Roy.
I get the sense that it's probably best to kind of put it on hold until next week because as it is, some of the stuff I talk about is esoteric. So if people can't hope to engage in the conversation, they tend to get distracted and look at the ceiling and stuff. So maybe we should put it on hold until next week when we can do it legitimately with a little give and take. Because I sort of like the Socratic method of throwing out questions and getting responses and that leading to more and more topics.
I agree with you, Roy. The Socratic method is what the TechNet has primarily been. People can give us an active feedback, and that makes it fun for them. If it was all one way, where they just sit and listen, it becomes a podcast. And that's not where our group is enthusiastic. I agree with you. Let's put it on hold for next week. So maybe Mother Nature's trying to tell us something. It's time we go watch a football game. AC2GS, or any other further comments? K2IW.
Okie doke, is AC2GS. I've been sort of following in the background. It's coming to a close very soon. It's in the final quarter, and that's about the entire knowledge of football that I possess. So maybe just the universe wants us to watch the football game. I don't know. It's got to be better next week, so we'll try it again next week, and who knows, maybe something incredibly scientific will happen in the next week that we can discuss.
Am I getting in? And so we out.
So we're going to put the TechNet on hold until next week. So, carry through you all, and next week we'll pick up on both the science and physics, as well as the space report. K2RIW, TechNet Limark, we're clear for now because of technical difficulties.
And this is WS2N. I wonder if I made it through.
I hear you, Paul.
Oh, amazing. Okay. I'm going through Selman. Okay. Hello, Roy and Dick. I know you're going to close down, but on the 6th, on Tuesday, watch the Falcon Heavy. First time they're going to do the Falcon Heavy. That's 3 Falcon 9 boosters taking off at one time at 1:30 in the the afternoon, unless it's delayed, you know, it's a new rocket, you never know, they might scrub it. But Tuesday at 1:30, anywhere between 1:30 and 4:30, but probably 1:30. I'm glad I made it through. Okay, back to you, Dick, and I know you're going to close.
Okay, yeah. We don't need quite as much Socratic method with your report on the space report pool, and you are coming through. So if you want to make a space report, go right ahead. It's your choice. WS2N, KQLIW.
Well, that was the main thing. You know, I've been talking about that thing for years. You know, it was supposed to take off. Originally, that was supposed to be designed and working by 2013. That's the Falcon 9 Heavy, they call it, FH or Falcon Heavy. So I'll be taking off from Florida, Launch Complex 39A. And the neat thing about it is the two boosters are going to return. They're going to, you know, they'll have two boosters, which are really two Falcon 9 boosters. They're going to return and land back at the Cape. We've got two big X's rolled in the landing site at Landing Zone 1, they call it now. And then the third booster, the one in the middle, the core, is going to go out a couple of hundred miles out into the ocean and land on the barge. And that leaves the final stage, the actual second stage, what you would normally call it, going to space. And that's going to take the car. You've got a car inside there called the Tesla Roadster, a red car. You know, he owns Tesla Corporation. So he put a car in there, and that's going to go into heliocentric orbit out by the Mars orbit. It's going to stay. Not even near Earth, but in the path of Mars. It's not going to orbit Mars, it's going to orbit the Sun forever. So the reason to use that, you know, you have to use a W weight if nobody signs on to the, you know, dangerous mission to put a, you know, $1 billion satellite in this. So it's a test, really. So you figure, well, I'll just put my car in there as an advertisement gimmick. But I had to mention that, Dick. That's going to be a cool watch if they do it on Tuesday at 1:30.
Paul, where you said the two boosters are coming in space, are they both the first stage, and then the second stage is the one that's going to land in another place? I'm amazed that there are two separate boosters for the first, if I've got that correct. Over to you, Paul.
I'm getting through on 440. And two we go.
Okay, stand by. Yeah, Rich, you are. Okay. Okay, Dick. You can imagine a regular Falcon 9 rocket is this 159-foot first stage booster. And then there's a second stage that goes up, you know, that takes the whole rocket to 130 feet. So this 159-foot, you know, rocket first stage booster has now one on the port side and one on the starboard side, another booster, exactly like the core, exactly like this 159-foot booster. So here this thing is lined up at 12-foot diameters. Each one's 12 foot, so 12.4. It's like 36, 37 feet in diameter, in length, you know, roughly. Measure it on a launch pad. 27 engines going off at one time instead of 9. Now they have 27 engines now going off at one time. It goes off, launches, and then 7 minutes later, one on the port and the one on the starboard side will return to Cape Canaveral and land on the land. And by the way, these original two boosters, they were used before. These are second use boosters that these two have come back in the past. And what we normally call the second stage is on top of the original core booster. That's why you bring the whole height to 230 feet. That top, what we call the second stage booster, is still there. That's going to continue out into space. And in front of that, on top of that, they have the car is inside these fairings. Fairings will open up, and eventually the call will be pushed out away from the second stage. Back to you, Dick.
If I understand correctly, stand by, man. If I listen to myself, no. I was hoping I could eliminate some of the delay. I found a way of eliminating some of the delay. The, to listen to my own voice, feedback and delay is kind of confusing. The 27 boosters, 27 thrusters, that's the first stage. Then there are two boosters that are going to come back. I'm confused. 27 boosters, the first stage, does that come back? The two boosters, are they the second stage, or are they subsets of the 27 boosters? Over to you, Paul. WS2N, K2RIW.
Yeah, think of it this way. His normal rocket that he normally sends up, he's sent up over 50 so far over the last, I don't know how many years. Each Falcon 9 rocket is 230 feet high. That's a little short of that, but we'll call it 230 feet, which is incorporates the booster and the second stage. The booster is 159 feet tall. That booster contains 9 Merlin engines, 9 of them. There's 8 of them, you know, surrounding the circumference of that engine, of that booster, and then there's one in the middle. That gives you 9 Merlin engines. Okay, so that thing is 159 feet high. Now, take a nut now, that's the normal configuration. And that goes up, that usually nowadays comes back to a landing pad or goes down to an autonomous ship at sea. And the second stage, the one up above it, continues on and brings that whatever the payload is to orbit. Okay, that's the original configuration. Now, they call this one the Falcon Heavy. So it's the exact same setup, but take another booster, 159 feet tall with 9 more Merlin engines, just like it, and bolt it to the port side, take another one, 159 foot booster, and bolt that to the starboard side, also with 9 engines. Now you got a total of 27 engines that have to go off at the exact same time. Actually, they go off about a millisecond apart from one another. But we'll call that the first stage. We'll call that the first stage now. Boosters, we'll call that the first stage of the drop, which is really 2 Falcon 9 rockets. The core stage down the middle, we'll call that the second stage. That continues on after the two other boosters have separated, and they're on their way back to Cape Canaveral. That middle one, that core booster, is identical to the other ones that are on the way back to Florida. Continuing on. Eventually that burns out, almost runs out of fuel, but it has enough fuel to eventually get back to the ship, the Atlantic Ocean. Before it does that, it separates from that top stage. We'll now call that the third stage. We used to call that the second stage. And now that third stage will push the payload to orbit, in this case to heliocentric orbit. Back to WS2.
Dick, is Roy still around? I have a question to him, if possible.
I recommend you hold that question until next week, Rich, because we decided to discontinue the Roy portion tonight, and we're only going to have the space report. Okay, I've now got the picture of Paul. What we call the first stage is now going to be these 2 9 booster starboard and port side. That's the first stage. The second stage is the core with its 9. And then the so-called third stage is what really goes into heliocentric orbit. Quite a machine. So this combination of 3 boosters for the first stage, I'm going to call it. In other words, when it leaves the pad, if I understand correctly, two boosters are blasting and the center core is quiet. The center core takes over when the two boosters run out. So that's the second stage, so to speak, even though physically it's located where the first stage normally would be. And I think you're saying this is the first time that this Falcon 9 Heavy has been used. So this particular combination is what he's now about to prove, that it can launch some very heavy payloads. Out of curiosity, what's the maximum payload it can tolerate, Paul? WS2N, K2RIW?
Okay, 140,000 pounds to low Earth orbit, which is over twice the amount what the shuttle could have brought to low Earth orbit. Gives you an idea. You almost have it, the scenario right, but the 27 rocket engines will go off at the same time. All three main cores, the core and the one on the port and one on the starboard side, all go off at the same time. The difference is the core will go, these are all throttable. It will be throttled down. So it will have a lot of fuel left as the two left and right separate. So the center one will continue on a little bit longer, not much longer. And then that will again separate from the second stage, and that will return to the ocean platform. So he's going to recover all three boosters. So that's the deal. And they all become reusable. Well, actually, in this case, the port and starboard have been used on previous flights, so this will be the second time around for those Falcon 9. Let me drop it. The thrust is almost as high as the shuttle. The shuttle usually, is almost 6 million. This is around 5.5, 1 million. But the reason it could lift more payload, 140,000 pounds of low Earth orbit, where the shuttle was, in the 50,000 pound categories, because you were bringing up a whole shell. So whatever fit inside the cargo bay, that was the weight, so the payload weight that you could bring to orbit. This thing, it doesn't have a shuttle attached to it, so it's going to go off that way. And then, interesting, he's going to be playing a song, Space Oddity. That was a song from an artist that just died not too long ago. And I was talking to somebody recently, and we're kidding around. Well, since it's an old song, like from the 80s, I guess, maybe he'll have an 8-track tape going. This way he'll keep going around and around. The 8-track tapes never stop. And this way, a billion years from now, he'll be able to have, somebody pulls up and says, hey, here's a car going around in orbit. Hey, look, it's got an 8-track tape in it. But, that's all gimmicky, but, he's got to send something up. He's actually got a flight he's going to launch for the United Arab Emirates later on this year in this configuration, the Falcon Heavy system. And then he's got another one for the military toward the end of the year. So if this all works out, he's got his contract already signed, ready to go.
Okay, I've got the picture now. Interesting. I am guessing what's happening is what's really happening is that at the instant you leave the pad, you've got maximum weight and you need full thrust of all three, starboard, port, and center. Soon after that, when you burn off some of the fuel, you can throttle back the middle guy, the middle booster, and so therefore, when you burn out the starboard and port side, you abandon those, you jettison those, and because you throttle back the center stage, you've got quite a bit of fuel left. You can blast him a little bit further before lighting up the third stage, and you still leave enough fuel left in that middle guy that you can bring him back to Earth. So, all three of those base boosters, starboard, port, and center, all come back. And 138,000 pounds, that's more than 8 of a million pounds of payload to low Earth orbit. That's quite a machine. Over you, Paul. Do I have the picture right? WS2NT2RIW.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And anytime you hear the word heavy attached to a rocket, you know, that means it's the same kind of configuration. So it's been done before. For instance, they have and still have the Delta IV Heavy. Well, there's the Delta IV. That goes up quite a bit. Delta IV is built by United Launch Alliance, which is a combination of Lockheed and Boeing. And they launch Delta IV. They launch many, many military missions, National Reconnaissance Office launches, and you know, they've launched from California, they've launched from Florida. Well, they have a Falcon 4 Heavy version that they've done quite a few times, and that looks like this kind of setup. It's got three Delta IV boosters attached to one another, and you know, same kind of configuration, and they call that the Delta IV Heavy. So, and believe it or not, that has less thrust than this Falcon 9. It's got a tremendous amount of thrust because it's got 9 engines in each booster. ACJS query. The Delta IV has one engine per booster. Back to you. ACJS query.
Okay, my first question is, what's the threshold of heavy? Does that mean when you exceed 100,000 pounds and then pick up Bill, AC2IS? WS2N, T2IW, go ahead, Paul.
That's the name, pretty much what they give when you have three. Instead of your one rocket, you're going to send three up at one time. That's the idea. Bill, over to you, WS2N, good evening.
Hey, guys. Talking about, they have to leave a certain amount of fuel in these boosters in order for them to be able to return to the ground safely. I'm wondering why they don't put parachutes on these things. It seems like that would save a whole lot of fuel, being able to slow the rocket a bit with a parachute, AC2IS.
Yeah,
Rob,
Bill, he experimented with them early on. When he used to launch from Kwajalein. So thinking about it, he realized that it's much more complex, first of all, and then you're adding weight. You're adding weight to the top part of the booster. And he felt that would be taking away from the payload. He thought the complexity of coming down with a parachute and then somehow trying to land this pinpoint in some location was going to be tough. So he devoted all the time to creating a system where you could land pinpoint, and he does pinpoint right on X. If you look at the landing zone 1 in Florida that he's developed, or for that matter, these floating barges out at sea. He has one out in the Atlantic, and he's got another barge out in the Pacific that he's successfully landed many, many times. Back to you, Bill.
Right, understood the parachutes would add weight, but I would think they'd add a lot less weight than the amount of fuel it would take to do the same job. And, of course, you don't have to use the parachute as a steering mechanism to get you where you're going. You could just use the chute to slow you down for a certain part of the trip, then let the parachute go and switch over to the same old rocket system he's using now. Like it would be cheaper in terms of fuel, but I don't know, maybe more likely to fail. I'm not sure. ACQIS.
Yeah, he used the word complexity because what happens is this thing's about 60 miles up in space when the booster separates. It's actually in space. So there's no air to, you know, if he opened up the parachute up there, it's not going to grab anything anyway. Too rarefied. So he uses little nitrogen jet rockets to flip the whole booster around 180 degrees, and then he ignites three of these 9 engines to boost back, they call it a boost back burn, to boost back to Florida. And then
the nitrogen jets go again, and his current's still actually up, you know, really above the atmosphere. He turns himself again, and then he starts coming back down through the atmosphere. And he launches, he lights the three engines again, slow him down even more as he's coming through the atmosphere. They call that the re-entry burn. And then right before he lands on the barge or at land, it's got to be maybe no more than 15 seconds or 20 seconds, just the center engine comes on, and that gives him control all the way down to the landing. And again, it's throttled down to 30% of 100. So that's pretty much what he's doing, though. He's been doing it for quite a few years now. Now he's got to do three at once. That's what I want to say. Back to you, Bill.
Right, so you're saying that the most part during the descent he's not firing his engines at all. It's, you know, basically he takes it out of orbit, so it starts falling, and then it's pretty much free fall until a few seconds before he touches down. Is that right? ACQIS.
Yeah, the boosters are, well, officially, the boosters never really make it to orbit themselves. They can make it around 60 miles. And because he only fires them for short periods of time, I guess he doesn't need that much fuel. They say it's 15 to 20% of the fuel on the rocket that he needs to make it back. So it gives you an idea. So he, without the fuel, you know, he's done that. In fact, I think a flight or two ago, he launched the Zoomer satellite for the military into geosynchronous orbit, and that was not a recoverable booster. I believe that was the one. Because he needed all his power to get that thing up, all the way to geosynchronous. So he did not even put landing legs on this. He didn't have the fins. By the way, he has fins on top that open up that guide the booster back to and help him control the booster to his landing place. So he didn't need any of that, you know, when he was some very Falcon Heavy that he's doing this Tuesday is that he could launch any kind of a payload of truck. Bring that payload to orbit, geosynchronous, it doesn't matter, and bring all three boosters back. His theory is it's costing roughly $62 million per booster to develop these boosters. And he could only put, if he could save the booster every time, it would cost him $200,000 in fuel. That's all it would cost him. And now he's in the process of doing this now. I think he's had five boosters that he's reused. So think about it, he's saving $60 million times five already, you know. And now, over time, he's developing another group of boosters that, you know, also Falcon 9, that will be able to be used up to 10 times or more. Right now, these are being used just 2 times. Back to you, Bill. WS.
Yeah, I think I'm all out of questions over here. So back to you, AC Joanne.
Yeah, okay. He's developed this all the way from launching out by the Marshall Islands, the Kwajalein Islands. Started with the Falcon 1. Falcon 1 was one Merlin engine. It was called the Merlin engine. And then he was going to do the Falcon 5. He was going to do 5 engines at one time. But let's skip over that. He went to the Falcon 9. So that's what he wound up developing what he has now today. And then plans were on the board for the Falcon Heavy. He wanted to do that by 2013-14. He realized that this is much more complex than what he thought. You know, he thought he was just going to strap three of these things together and off he goes. And he said that, you know, the core had to be reinforced, all kinds of precipitous and whatever he had to do to do this properly. Special actuators to push themselves apart. He's using pneumatic pushes. It really got involved, and plus other things came up, you know, in the space world. I can get the lead. But here he is. He said he was going to do this. Let's see if he makes it. He's already lit the engines off as a test in Florida. All 27 engines at one time. He did that about a week or so. He lit them off for 10 seconds. And he had everything locked down, so it won't go nowhere. So that's where we're at. Quite a character. Elon Musk from SpaceX. Back to you,
sir. I've got two questions, Paul. Question number one, after he burns up the starboard and port side booster and he, at 60 miles, returns that to the over the space port and he's now coming down vertically, does he deploy any wing light devices near the nose of that booster to make it easier to keep it vertical on the way down? That's question number one. Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, if you look at the top of the booster, the big fins come out, they call them fins, there's four of them. They come out and you could, they could actuate things, they could move one way or the other. And they pop out as they're coming through the atmosphere. And that controls quite a bit aerodynamically, so that he can get his booster where he's got to where he has to go. They used to be made of aluminum, but they would get pretty beat up. Wouldn't be able to reuse them. So he switched over to titanium fins now. This way they're able to reuse them, you know, flight after flight. The legs come out, I mean, seconds before they land, like 10 seconds before they land. Four legs open up. He's got a camera looking down, so you can see that. So yes, he does have fins.
Those four fins that were made out of aluminum, and you said they ended up getting beat up. Are they being beat up by physically contacting something? I'm having trouble believing the atmosphere would beat those up. So what was beating those up for?
The temperature. They were, you know, it was... You said they were... not reusable. And you can see they look like they look like they were heated up, you know, like we're gonna put a torch on these elements. You know, that's the way it looks. So yeah, then I've seen the new ones and they look pretty clean right after they land. So yeah, they right near the top, cameras up there. The fins open, you know, the fins are below the camera, so as it's coming towards the earth, you see that some of the shots that you see taking from land, you know, you see it beautiful. You can see, this whole booster all the way to space.
Okay, what time of day on Tuesday is the Falcon 9 launch going to take place? And what's your recommended website that we should go to get this report, to get the best, the most lively display of what's happening? Okay, Paul.
You go to the SpaceX webcast. Type that in, SpaceX webcast. There are other sites, but I like to go directly, you know, right to them. I've tried a couple of the other ones. They're good. But, you know, naturally, your best reality is to go to SpaceX webcast, they call it, SpaceX webcast. And that's, you know, you won't see it on NASA because it's not a NASA mission. NASA, you know, will put it on. If there was a NASA satellite or something in there, yeah, they would put it on there, you know, but you won't see it. So that's where you have to go. 15 minutes, usually 15 to 20 minutes before the launch. That's when they come on. You know, when you if you click on early, like an hour early, you know, you'll have a little small countdown clock. You know, 59 minutes to for the website. You know, and then It finally comes on about 15, 20 minutes before. They'll give you a rundown of what they plan on doing. They'll go through the whole launch. You'll watch all the landings of the boosters. It's really cool. I just worry about delays. Anytime you have a new rocket of any kind, although this is a common rocket, the Falcon 9, the configuration is sure is different. You know, I worry about delays. But long-term weather for, I have Cocoa Beach programmed in. Looks pretty good. The weather should be good. Back to you, Dick.
Okay, SpaceX webcast, 15 minutes before launch. And tell us once again, what time of day is that launch, Paul, if there's no delays?
It'll be Tuesday, February 6th, between 1:30 and 4:30. It'll start at 1:30 if there's a delay, they'll pick it off, another half hour, 10 minutes, whatever it is. But that's the window, 1:30 to 4:30. If it doesn't go for any reason, there's a scrub, and it's a 24-hour scrub. Again, it will go from 1:30 to 4:30. It's not time-sensitive, it's not one of these windows that have to be, some of them have to go off on the second. Between 1:30 and 4:30, I think he's got clearance downrange. You have to everything with a lot of people before you do a launch. And I think he's got clearance for that launch, but three different days. So, back to you, Dick.
Right ahead, Eric.
No, I just wanted to say that, I watch the NASA satellite, and I've seen every SpaceX launch that they carry. They carry it to a point, and then they go away from it. I think the SpaceX will go on to a lot of gas. They always carry their money.
Your audio is quite a bit lower than both Paul and mine tonight, Eric.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Is this any better?
Tremendously better. All right. Did you get what I said anyway? It was so low that some people may have had trouble, so please repeat a little bit of it.
Yes, they will come on. But if not, they won't come on.
NASA has three transponders. It's got one which is the public channel, one is an information channel, and the other one is the 4K coming down from the space station. That's full time, by the way.
But
they always carry the SpaceX launches wide. They just don't carry the commentary that at the end that you'll see on the SpaceX site.
True. If I have it. Let's say they're launching a cargo mission to the space station, and SpaceX is doing it. Yeah, you'll see the launch, you'll see the separation of the cargo vehicle, the Dragon going up to the space station. But let's say it's going to be a booster. The booster's going to come back and land at Cape Canaveral. Will land out in the ocean. That part of the mission is not government funded. NASA cuts it off. I've seen it, they just cut it off. Like you said, you won't see anything past that. If you have SpaceX webcasts on, they continue to cover it. You'll watch that whole thing land. So it's pretty strange, but NASA is governed by taxpayers, so they just cut them off. That's not part of the NASA mission. Done after they separated. That's where I found that anyway, over time. If it's a NASA mission, I'll watch it on NASA. In fact, some of the missions you have to, it might be a UL, United Launch Alliance, ULA mission, Delta IV bringing something up for NASA, and Atlas V bringing something up for NASA, planetary mission. You have to watch NASA one because then it won't be on SpaceX. It's not a SpaceX mission. It won't be on the SpaceX webcast. The best thing to do Well, you get everything from the transponder. The best thing I do from the computer is I just save the SpaceX webcast and NASA television, both as favorites on the computer. Dick, over to you.
So this mission is not a NASA mission, if I understand correctly. This is Elon Musk proving that his Falcon 9 Heavy is a viable piece of booster hardware, and therefore won't be covered by the NASA sites. Is that true, Paul?
That's exactly right. That's what's going to happen. So it's a proof of concept mission. Now, there's more military contracts coming out very shortly in the next month or so, you know, for future flights for the next couple of years. He is now able to build, bid on those military contracts, where at one time he couldn't. The United Launch Alliance, that's a consortium between Boeing and Lockheed Martin, had a monopoly on this. Now they don't. SpaceX is now allowed to actually bid on those contracts. Dick?
Are the Merlin engines a domestic product? And has Elon Musk ever used any of the Russian boosters? Who do you pull?
They're all 100% made in Hawthorne, California. They started off with the Merlin, let's call it the Merlin A, and then he skipped the B, and he went to the Merlin C, and now he's up to the Merlin D's. Each one is, you know, produces more horsepower, more thrust. So, you know, he's improved over the years. So, 100% made in California, Hawthorne, California. That's, you know, that's where he makes the cargo vehicle, and now he's making the crew vehicle in 2019 when he's sending that up to space station with the crew on board, all being made right here in the good old USA. So that's good. And his future rockets, the engines for the interplanetary transportation rocket that he's making will also be made there. Let's call the Raptor engines. Won't be the Merlins anymore. They're Raptor engines. Back to there.
So I think he has or has not ever used any Russian boosters. And is Musk the guy that was thinking of using a turbo pump that's run by battery? Over you, Paul.
No, and he's never used the Russian anything. The guy with the batteries, that's Peter Beck. He owns Rocket Lab. Rocket Lab is a company that successfully, I was going to talk about that again, a week or so ago, he launched his first rocket successfully into orbit. And he did that from New Zealand. He built his own launch complex in New Zealand on the North Island. He only had the South Island and the North Island. He wanted to do the South Island, and the government said no way. He went to a more sparse area on the North Island, and he developed the Electron rocket, they call it, and that's the one that runs on batteries, like you said, Dick. Each rocket is powered by its own is powered by these massive batteries, and that runs the turbines. And then he uses RP-1 fuel, kerosene, and liquid oxygen to feed these Rutherford engines. He calls them Rutherford engines. You know, Rutherford. I think he had a New Zealand background or something. He named it after that scientist. So that's what he's doing. It's a lot smaller rocket. You know, he can launch maybe 500 pounds into low Earth orbit. It's not reusable. The body is all carbon fiber. The rocket engines are all